evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, January 10, 2018. A South Sudanese analyst says rebellion is becoming popular in South Sudan.
So the kinds of politics that is going on in South Sudan is the politics of the belly, if you wish, where having a military unit and trying to fight has been the quickest way to be included at the top.
And authorities in Juba say they want to use sports to unite the nation's youth.
12 football teams will compete in the tournament, and they are Juba, Wow, Malakal, Bentiu, Jungule, Tori, Jambio, Awil, Kwajuk, Rumbek, Abiyai, and Pibor.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A South Sudanese analyst says the future of politics in South Sudan is not bright because politicians use rebellions as the only means of addressing their grievances. In part two of our interview with Jock Madud Jock, the founder of the Juba-based SAD Institute, he says the environment in South Sudan is not suitable for democracy due to politics of ethnicity. He says until all South Sudanese rise up to challenge their leaders, instability will be the order of the day in the country for a long time.
Politics has never been healthy in South Sudan, in the sense that with the way we have seen politics being performed or displayed in other countries, is that people try to have a vision about what they would do if they took office. So that politics is of programs and issues and plans, where one person says, if I was to take this office, this is what I would do. And that would be an agenda of a political party or a military group that is trying to upstage have a coup. At least they would have a program. But the politics of South Sudan has always been simply a search for an avenue to public office for the sake of public office, because government has been the sole employer in South Sudan, where everybody aspires to hold public office rather than invest in something else like business or any other kind of occupation that one can engage in private enterprise. So the kinds of politics that is going on in South Sudan is the politics of the belly, if you wish, where having a military unit and trying to fight has been the quickest way to be included at the talks, in the peace talks, that all the many peace talks that have taken place throughout this period since 2013. Have been geared towards dividing power and resources, and never been geared towards actually crafting a sustainable peace for the country.
Yeah, what is the future of South Sudan with this politics of militarization?
I think if I talk as a nationalist, somebody who has a naive commitment to bring about a stable country, I would say, of course, South Sudan has always suffered, and it has always risen above any kind of suffering. So there is no way that I would diminish the hope that eventually we will find our way to a stable South Sudan. But if I speak as a realist, somebody who has really watched this country for the better part of my life, I say change is going to take a long time to come, and the country will remain in the limbo for a very long time. And unfortunately, in a country now where you have 7 million people reduced to abject poverty, even poorer than they were during the Liberation War, where you have 2 million people in refugee camps, where the currency of the country has lost 90% of its value, and inflation in triple digits, I really see change coming very, very slowly, if it ever comes at all in our lifetime.
And what are the people doing to bring this change? I mean, let's talk about change. What are the people doing to bring this change? Because my understanding is that the power is in the hands of the governed, not the governor.
That is what you would think in a country where so many people are suffering. If we take a leave from the Sudanese history before independence, we know that it is the popular uprisings that have always brought change. If we talk, we see people protesting in Congo just the other day. If we look at the way the Arab Spring was carried out, it was, you always have that hope that the people will eventually say we've had enough, and that they would rise in a popular protest that will eventually cause the army to take their side and force the government of the day out of office, allowing for a new political dispensation to take place. That is the way it would have happened. But the problem is, in South Sudan, the people of South Sudan are extremely divided to the point that a collective civic action is nearly impossible. And, if you look at the main divisions, the people of Equatoria would be extremely afraid about going into a street protest, because the fear is that since the army is made up largely of Nuer and Dinka from Bahapa Nile and Bahar Ghazal, the fear is that these armies and national security forces will retaliate and would hit at the Equatorian protesters, because they would be thought as people who are trying to overthrow their government. The people in Bahar Ghazal are also now divided between various communities, to the point where some of them who are already lodged into the government and who are in tight control of the government would see all the others as people who are trying to get them out of office. And so there will be no unity among the Bahar Ghazalians against the government. So I think that and the same goes for Upper Nile. And I think the division between civilians along ethnic lines and regional lines make it extremely difficult for a rallying point to be found, so that people from different ethnic groups can finally speak with one voice against the government.
That's Jock Madu Jock, founder and director of the SAD Institute. He was speaking with me from Syracuse in New York yesterday. Reports say one student was killed and five others injured in Khartoum as street protests spread across Sudan against price hikes caused by government austerity measures. Demonstrations followed a similar protest in the southeastern city of Sinnar on Saturday after bread prices doubled following the government's announcement last month that it was eliminating subsidies on its 2018 budget. Police fired tear gas at about 400 demonstrators who chanted no, no to price rises in the southeastern city of Damazin. We now go live to Khartoum to Osman Margani, the managing editor of Al Tayar Arabic newspaper. Good evening, Osman.
Good evening.
How is Khartoum doing today?
It seems a little bit calm. It's not like the last 3 days, because today there was no demonstrations in most of the universities only. There was a demonstration for the women in the University of Al-Ahfad. Al-Ahfad is an university which is only for women. There was a very large demonstration there, but it was controlled by the administration of the university itself. They could not get outside to the street. And before that, there was some demonstrations in Khartoum University along the 3 last days. Today also there was a demonstration in Khartoum University, but it was not very big, and most of the students cannot get out of the building of the university because the security was very tight outside the university.
And what are you hearing from other parts of the country?
Yeah, there was a student killed in Darfur, west of Darfur, 2 days back. But most of the cities now, they are calm. Before that, there was demonstrations in Sinnar and Damazin, and it started, actually, the first demonstration was in Madani, which is just 200 kilometers from Khartoum. Right now, I think outside Khartoum, there was nothing to say about demonstrations, but some troubles are supposed to be in Kassala, because there was they declared a state of emergency in Kassala state, and so many troubles are supposed to be in Qatar during the week.
And do you have any details of any prominent people arrested during these street protests?
Yeah, there are two prominent politicians. One of them is the leader of the Sudanese Popular Congress, which is a very active party in the opposition side. And also Ibrahim Sheikh, who is a very famous politician. He was detained for 2 days. And there were around 20 of the other leaders from the same party, but they are in junior. They were not prominent politicians.
And my understanding is that when there are street protests like that in Sudan, authorities will always crack down on journalists. Are newspapers allowed to report on these protests?
No, of course. My newspaper was closed for 1 day because of trying to report these demonstrations and the mosque, and even to report not the demonstration itself, actually the effect of the financial, of the economical crisis in Sudan. And it's known for all of the editors in chief of all the newspapers that writing or trying to report about what is happening in this regard may be very dangerous for the newspaper. It may be confiscated for 1 day, 2 days, or it may be closed forever.
And what is the impact of this protest on the city of Khartoum?
You know, till now, it doesn't make a very great impact because it's very limited inside the university, two universities, and most of them are students. But I think the government is trying now to prepare itself for maybe during the coming days there are some more economical decisions may be taken by the government. So the security was trying to be ready for what will happen if more demonstrations can happen in Khartoum, or maybe if some troubles in other cities may occur during the coming days if more economical decisions were taken by the government.
And how is life for the ordinary Sudanese man and woman? How is life like?
Very difficult, very tough right now. Everything is not only double. Some of the very essential, needs of the normal civilians is sometimes 10 times the last price before the economical new policy declared by the government. It's very difficult right now to for most of the people, even the people who have good salaries and they are working in a very big company, they are suffering very much. The poorest people, they cannot afford to buy the drugs, which is some essential for the life, to keep their life. Some essential drugs, they cannot afford to buy it. And I think this is the most difficult thing now. Most of the drugs, the medicine in Sudan, are now very, very. It's very difficult for everybody to buy it. And the most biggest problem is it's not available in the hospitals or even in the pharmacies.
Yes,
it's very difficult to get the medicine.
All right, Osman, thank you very much for speaking with us from Khartoum. That's Osman Margani, the managing editor of a Tayar newspaper. He was speaking with me live from Khartoum. The South Sudan government is trying to unite youth across the country through sport. The South Sudan's culture, youth and sports minister says the government will transport hundreds of youth to Juba from across the country to take part in 9 days of sports activities beginning later this month. Waki Simon Wudu has more on the story from Juba.
Those are United Nations mission in South Sudan, Graders and Compactors, leveling and preparing a football field at Juba One Boys Primary School today. Besides Juba National Stadium, the Bangladesh contingent at UNIMIS is renovating four other football grounds ahead of the sports events marking a National Unity Day. Culture, Youth and Sports Minister Nadia Arop-Dudi says the government will host at least 400 youth under the age of 20 from across the country to participate in various sports activities, including men and women's football, to mark the National Unity Day.
There were selected 12 football teams will compete in the tournament, and they are Juba, Wau, Malakal, Bentiu, Jungule Tori, Yambio, Awil, Kwajuk, Rumbek, Abiyai, and Pibor. These are the players that were selected as a 12th person to compete from different areas of the country.
Dudi says in addition to football, 8 teams comprising both boys and girls from various states will compete in various athletics activities. And 4 teams of girls will participate in volleyball, she says. South Sudan's Culture, Youth and Sports Ministry initiated the National Unity Day 3 years ago. Officials say the day is aimed at uniting South Sudanese youth across the country.
The main objective of the National Unity Day is to promote the integration of diverse populations through a sport of fair play and sportsmanship.
The Japan and International Cooperation Agency, or JICA, is funding the activities to commemorate the National Unity Day. Taban Koma, a representative of JICA, says his organization believes sports activities can help build of relationship among South Sudanese youth who, he says, are being divided along ethnic lines due to ongoing conflict.
The youth who will have never met otherwise get to know each other during the 9 days program, in which they dine, sleep together, participate in educational, recreational activities, and at the end of the program, they make friends with the youth from other parts of the country, rejoice the diversity of South Sudan, and ultimately, they can play a leading role in bringing about cohesion in the society.
Some South Sudanese youth are calling on the government to do more to engage young people in sports activities, arguing that it will help youth as South Sudanese. One youth who prefers to be called Anthony says the National Unity Day activities will enable youth learn important values such as teamwork as well as how to coexist.
The sports unites everybody. And if you are united, that's the way that you can sit together, you discuss some important issues, that is in peace, and also you can share some ideas, that is in peace building.
Males Charles, a Juba-based youth, says the National Unity Day is a good initiative as it gives South Sudanese youth across the nation an opportunity to discover themselves.
Actually, to my opinion, it's a good idea for our government launching that big program actually. So I can say us in Juba, we don't know actually those who are in Wau or Malakal or where the way they behave. And we also here we need to show our talents to those outside there so that we can also know ourselves, the way we came from, our places, so that we can know really our ideas and we can exercise everything so that we can bring unity in this South Sudan.
This year's National Unity Day is being commemorated under the theme Sports for Peace and Social Cohesion. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we take a look at the European Union's report on the Kenya's presidential election. That story is coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your favorite celebration food?
I can say it's pandan yam. Pandan yam is being made out of yam. They pound it and it become thin like semo. So that is pandan yam.
Alkubus is a kind of steam bread, I can say, made of flour or wheat flour, with stew, vegetable soup, and you can even eat it raw. It tastes great.
My favorite food is komonia. Whenever I go in a certain celebration, that's what I like eating. It's a kind of meat made out of many things indeed, but it's so delicious, so that's why I like it.
I like jollof with dried fish with beef. I like it a lot because anytime I take it, it makes me very, very happy.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. The European Union's chief observer for Kenya's 2017 elections says the process was far from perfect, singling out in particular the country's politicians. As Mohammed Yusuf reports for VOA from Nairobi, the EU mission is calling for Kenya to undertake reforms that will strengthen democracy.
Speaking Tuesday at the European Parliament, the EU chief election observer in Kenya, Maria Shaka, blamed politicians for problems with the country's 2017 election.
The Kenyan people, including 5 million young people able to vote for the first time, did not fully enjoy their democratic rights as are legally foreseen for all Kenyans. The electoral process was damaged by political leaders attacking independent institutions and by a lack of dialogue between the opposing sides, with escalating dispute and violence.
The EU mission chief said the process disappointed voters, leading to political confrontations, and the East African nation remained divided. In less than 3 months in 2017, Kenya's Electoral Commission organized two presidential elections. The first poll in August was nullified by Kenya's Supreme Court after it found illegalities in the transmission of election results. At least 15 million Kenyans voted in August, a huge turnout credited in part to technology, as many believe that biometric voter identification and electoral transmission of results would reduce electoral fraud. But Shaka says technology did not help Kenya overcome its fears.
Some had hoped that the use of advanced technologies would increase trust. But technology cannot replace trust, and the lack of testing for capacity and security led to concerns that must certainly be addressed in the future.
In the repeat poll in October, only about 7.6 million of 19.6 million registered voters turned out. President Uhuru Kenyatta won with 98% of the vote after his main challenger Raila Odinga withdrew from the election. With the fear of voter apathy in the future, Shaka says Kenya needs urgent reforms.
I urge Kenyan leaders, as well as Kenya's international partners, to prioritize addressing structural issues as well as strengthening principles such as a stronger rule of law, separation of powers, respect for independent institutions, and of course, the rights and freedoms of the people of Kenya.
The EU mission suggested strengthening Kenya's independent institutions, improving the technology used in the elections, and also improving the election results mechanism. In Kenya, the call for leaders to work together and form an inclusive government has been growing, after Odinga and his running mate vowed to swear themselves in as president and deputy president before the end of January. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
Activists in southern Zimbabwe are taking legal action to demand the truth about a series of massacres in the 1980s that targeted perceived opponents of the then President Robert Mugabe. An estimated 20,000 civilians were killed by North Korea-trained troops under the authority of the current president, Emmerson Mnangagwa, who was the Minister of Security at that time. Sebastian Mwofu brings us this report from Harare.
In their application, the activists asked Zimbabwe's High Court to compel President Emmerson Mnangagwa's government to release the findings of a commission of inquiry on the massacres. Dumisani Dube, lawyer for the pressure group Ibechuli Kazulu, is hopeful despite previous attempts which hit a brick wall. He says the situation has changed in Zimbabwe since 2013, when a new constitution was enacted.
In terms of new constitution of Zimbabwe, section 62, there's a constitutional provision on the right to access to information, which entitles any person the right to access information which is held by state in the interest of public accountability, fairness, human dignity, and justice. So we're very positive.
Ousted President Robert Mugabe is cited in the court application as it was his government which presided over the massacres between 1982 and 1987. The atrocities, which rights groups say claimed about 20,000 lives, targeted members of the ethnic Ndebele population believed to support former Vice President Joshua Nkomo, then an opponent of Mugabe. They happened when Zimbabwe's current president was the Minister of Security. Lawyer Dube said he would serve the papers to the British Embassy in Harare for transmission to Theresa May's government in London. The pressure group wants the British government to release classified documents that might have details about the massacres. Asked to comment on the High Court application, Zimbabwe Justice Minister Ziyambe Ziyambe said,
"What is the application all about? I'm still to see it."
In a sign of growing tensions over the massacres, recently the army detained and assaulted some protesters demonstrating against a visit by President Mnangagwa to the southern region. The 75-year-old Zimbabwean leader has yet to comment on the issue since coming to power in November in an army-backed takeover. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
From Harare, we move to Zambia, where the Zambian Ministry of Health and the World Health Organization are beginning a cholera vaccination campaign today to help stop an outbreak of deadly disease. Latest official figures put the number of cases at 2,200, including 26 deaths. Lisa Schlein has the story for VOA from WHO headquarters in Geneva.
Two rounds of immunizations are planned. At each stage, about 1 million people will be vaccinated against cholera. Most of those who will receive these shots live in or around the Zambian capital, Lusaka, since nearly all of the cases of this fatal disease are centered there. World Health Organization spokesman Christian Lindemeyer says the WHO has helped the government plan the campaign and has trained about 500 health and community workers how to administer the vaccine. He agrees vaccination is an important measure in preventing the onset and spread of cholera. But he says access to clean water, proper sanitation, and good hygiene are fundamental to stopping outbreaks entirely. He tells VOA the government is taking measures to remedy the situation.
First of all, deployed the military to clean up parts of the city where sanitation has been poor, has also closed a market where sanitation was poor, has banned street vending and also public gatherings, and was delaying the start of the new school semester.
Cholera, an acute diarrheal disease, can kill within hours if left untreated. People become severely dehydrated and must have their lost fluids replaced quickly if they are to survive. Lindemeyer says it is critical for people to have access to treatment centers where they can easily be helped through oral rehydration or, in the more serious cases, through intravenous fluids. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
That's our show for this Wednesday. We now take you back to South Sudan with the song Anader Salam by I Am Peace Ambassadors.
Yeah. We're singing for peace. It doesn't matter which color. I am peace. Which you are peace. Which we are peace.
All we need is all hands.
There's no sense of living without a neighbor. When we deserve them, there's no sense of hating one another.
Let's learn to forgive and live in peace and harmony. It doesn't matter where you came from, what tribe or race, politicians, politicking, trying to cause.
We have been listening to a test of a song by I Am Peace Ambassadors. The title is Anader Salam. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We would like to know what you think about this show. You can reach us on southsudan@voanews.com. You can also check us on our Facebook page. Our Facebook name is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.